Birth, Volume 3, The Gathering, Chapter 15. The evening wind was cool across the sea. The birds seemed motionless in the gray air as it passed silently over their wings, like a gentle puppeteer suspended them so they could look deep into the water. His feet moved pale and bare, finding rhythmic solace in the thin wetness of the coarse sand. His rolled-up pant legs almost mocked the fall as it carried the warmth away with its quiet voice. Boris felt strangely righteous before its assault on the past trying to assert itself on his contemplation. His hand yearned for the velvet of his Sasha. Tears would no longer come to him. His breath was betrayed by his heart beating slowly, defying the distant need for it to end. He turned to continue his stroll along the shore of the Black Sea at the edge of the Crimea countryside, where his rented bungalow stood timeless and unpainted not far away. The sky was nearly gray as the leftover gray from Russia spilled over the earth, speaking rumors of winter. Peace had different meanings for different people. For some, it was the time between wars. For others, it was the silence of machines and men and power. For the past few months, it played the last few ripples of rage and the ebbing measures of a grand symphony, resting the drums and the brass, yielding to the strings of contemplation. Shelley LaSalle's words storied the end of a grand and fierce planet, shivering from a mortal wound from which it struggled for survival. The bullets had gone through her. She had bled and cried, not for herself, but for the ones that chose darkness. He thought of the roof of the Marriott Hotel in Medina, where the scarred man had tracked him down and wanted him to detonate the nuclear bombs he had so carefully staged to fulfill his plan of devastation. At the last, as he had the detonation code entered into the screen of his cell phone, the love came to him. The tender and pure people he had met in Saudi Arabia fed him and embraced him. The beautiful love of his Sasha had fallen from the stars above him like a waterfall in stark contrast to the face of evil that had attacked him and his wife on the ground floor of the Tinkoff Club. The choice of the state over the people it oppressed had always been second nature for him. That belief, nothing wavering, is what promoted him so quickly through the ranks of the bureaucracy. He wore a dark suit as the robe of a leader of thousands in green uniforms that threatened the world with wars of proxy and strategy and negotiation on the world stage. But that night, even after weeks of technical perfection, he had chosen something different. Marina's cold power was a terrible poison on her breath that smelled of a terror from other worlds, older than every morsel of life on earth. At first, he welcomed it, like bottles of vodka to pour over the seeds that fell into his soul from the ashes of his apartment. The words shouted at him that night tortured his heart like a cattle prod stuck into him by gritting teeth. He chose the love instead. He did not die that night. He escaped the fear for the first time in his life. Liberty filled his cupped hands from that waterfall, and he chose to run away to his beckoning bride. He ran to the ignominious shores of Crimea to wait. He brought nothing with him, and yet he had everything. He had the kindness of Oscar and his wife. He had a lifetime of companionship of his beautiful Sasha. He could even feel the purring affection of his cat, Sputnik. Come what may, he was ready, and he was at peace. He was nearing his tiny gray bungalow built on the edge of the dry sand 100 meters up the slope from the water's edge. "Good evening, Mr. Sandpiper," he said to the small bird that skittered away from him in search for small bugs and sand crabs. He brushed the sand from his feet with a soft broom propped on the porch for this purpose and opened the black screen door to enter the front room. He turned on the radio, which remarkably still had a signal from one station tower a dozen miles away. Local country music played from the tiny speaker on the vintage blue plastic radio that sat on the kitchen counter. The rumbling in the ground had seemed to become more distant with each passing week. The waves on the beach had settled back down to the passive lapping he remembered when he was a boy on vacation here. He had not seen a container ship or an oil tanker in almost 2 months. The passenger jets going to Russia had long since disappeared from their high-altitude routes over the Black Sea. At times, he felt like the last man on Earth, but he had not changed his routine or contemplated an early exit from life. He knew it was just a matter of time before the big one came. But now it seemed like that time was getting further and further away. The plasma streaks he could see when the sky was an overcast had moved far to the south now. He could see the Milky Way's dark rift rotating slowly above the cool nighttime beach. The moon rising over the smooth black sea was enough to make him stop blinking for hours. But it had moved far to the south and didn't rise much over the horizon. A flock of geese flew across its bright white face a few nights ago, and there was no smell of perfume to dance the bare floor in his chest, though it seemed he could almost see the prints left by the slender bare feet just leaving the room. It was almost time. He finished the apple juice and tossed the can into the trash under the sink and pinched a piece of jerky from the Ziploc bag on the counter. Shelley's broadcast would be coming on soon. He shrugged and shook his head slightly in amazement as he thought about the technology it must take to translate Shelley's words on the fly like that. He knew scripted programs better than anyone, and he could tell she often wandered from the script. Prepared comments are parsed for clarity and effect, but these words came from somewhere else, because they were not random, nor were they without power and clarity. More than once, just as he had a question in his mind about what was being said, she would pause and answer that question with the very next words out of her mouth. The solar panels for the bungalow were 20 years old, as were the batteries that stored the energy for the water pump and the lighting. He turned on the LED light over the kitchen as the sun was over the horizon to the west. It would be enough. "Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Global News Update. I'm Shelley LaSalle. Let me open by sharing with you how grateful I am to be sharing this time with you each day. I know you are changing a little every day, and so am I. First of all, there is a planetary separation update. Jet Propulsion Labs has taken over the management of most of the space programs due to the furlough of most of the government employees at NASA. The Department of Defense has assumed the responsibility for all launch programs, which are focused completely on placing defense systems in orbit to protect you. As I said before, we're not going to war with anyone. No more humans will be broken and rebuilt into warfighters, because our mission is now to save as many souls as possible, including the would-be soldier. I have learned that losing one's life and losing one's soul are two completely independent events. If you have been watching the sky, you may have noticed every few hours the launch of rockets into low orbit. We are building a defense system over your heads, but we don't know how effective this will be, and I am told that it is a little like laying mousetraps in a million-acre field of wheat. It seems the northern seas are settling down. The few satellites we have left are reporting that rogue wave appearances are concentrated in the very southern oceans. The jet stream that should be lining up with the Midwestern U.S. and also the Siberian regions this time of year is no longer predictable. The atmospheric river that carries billions of gallons of water over our lands every day has been rerouted because of the new magnetic fields associated with the binary planet formation. The higher Earth and lower Earth are sitting on top of one another, barely connected at the poles. For some reason, the oceans are flowing to the higher Earth, leaving enormous deserts behind on the lower Earth. Another phenomenon was detected in the seismic models collected and analyzed by our internal team. The core of the planet is remaining with the higher Earth, but the moon is being left behind with the lower Earth. I hope you can keep that straight, but this has powerful implications for our rapidly evolving world. The magnetosphere that keeps us safe from cosmic radiation will remain with us. The tidal forces that move our oceans around and thus the nutrients for all life on Earth will disappear. Scientists are calculating how this will affect the food chain on our world, but so far the impact appears to be minimal. Why is that? Because the population of the higher Earth is about one-third of what it used to be. It doesn't mean that people have died. It means they have remained behind on the lower Earth. If you're hearing this broadcast, it probably means you are living on the higher Earth. Like you, I am grateful beyond compare for that realization, but it saddens me to no limit to know that so many people chose darkness in which to live. It shows us just how tempting the propaganda of the dark forces can be. For decades, the message was promulgated that government would take care of you if only you gave them your vote. Well, hundreds of millions of people did just that. They voted for themselves a government check and chose to follow the globalist elites like royal subjects. Now, they are paying an eternal price for selling their souls. You may have noticed that the earthquakes are beginning to subside, and that the plasma is lighting up the sky further south each day. Our scientists have a best guess that the two planets will be clear of one another in less than a month. That is not the end of danger, though. There are two dangers that we face in the immediate future. The plasma will be extremely intense for a few days as the two planets shoot massive bolts at one another. The second is from a possible attack from orbit by the forces of the lower Earth. There will be no landing parties. Our planet is now vibrating at a very high frequency, and our engineers are not sure if our own machines will be operational. There may be other changes. We will be free of the Nephilim, and there is no evil that can dwell here. The security measures on dimensional gateways may be relaxed. Now, I know that sounds pretty strange. It sounds strange when I say it to myself. We're not sure what the ancient records mean, but it is expected to be pretty amazing. Now let me address the religious traditions that are still out there. Let me just say that almost everything you have been taught is wrong, to some degree or another. That doesn't mean that you were taught incorrectly from your records. If you will search your heart, you will see that is true. We have been given records that gave us a conditional future. The billions of humans that are on the Earth right now have come from all over the universe to be born here on Earth. We read that future, planned for us, and we chose another future. It was always given to us to change, and we did. Simple as that. We are all part of that creation process. That you may have been taught you were somehow separate and offensive to God was the corruption of the ancient Nephilim. Just remember that Christ did not come here to teach us of his divinity. He came here to teach us of our divinity. I have one more thing, and then I'll let you go until tomorrow. Many of you have lost loved ones. I have too. I am told that we are not leaving without them. Do not fear. Love one another. I will see you here tomorrow. This is Shelley LaSalle saying goodbye for now. Boris let the radio go back to the recorded music and turned the volume to a low setting. He pushed his shoes from his feet, arranged them side by side next to the end table, and sat in the old recliner that faced the picture window framing the darkly graying sea and pulled the handle to extend the footrest. The ocean smell hung motionless, caught in the wire mesh of the rusted screen door. The sandpiper complained in the distance that night was coming, and time seemed to linger like a vinyl record in the clear track at the end of the last song. He rubbed his stocking feet together and hoped for his eyes to close. "If this is heaven, I can't say as I like it," he said to the empty room.